You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome, my friends, to the Political Cesspool Radio Program. I am your host, James Edwards, broadcasting to you live tonight from our flagship radio station, AM 1380 WLRM in Memphis, Tennessee, going out to the AM-FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network, and simulcasting around the world at thepoliticalcesspool.org. It's Saturday evening, July 20th, and this, my friends, may be the most powerful broadcast we bring to you all year. The entire 3 hours tonight, we were going to be offering you comprehensive opinion and analysis on the acquittal of George Zimmerman, and we are going to be bringing to you an all-star panel of guests, including Sam Dixon, Dr. Kevin McDonald, Kyle Rogers, Richard Spencer, and Jared Taylor. The latter of those two stars are aligned right now and will be appearing in tandem. Jared Taylor, of course, is the editor of American Renaissance magazine. Richard Spencer, the president of the National Policy Institute. Both my friends, gentlemen, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for having us on, James.
It's a pleasure indeed to have you both appearing in tandem, and we're going to get into why we're dedicating the entire 3 hours to coverage of this story. But Jared, I would first like to start with you, because I believe your article on the acquittal of Zimmerman was the first that I read from our side of the equation. Interestingly enough, Richard's piece, which is so hot off the press, I don't even believe it's been published to his own website yet, is the most recent. Jared, what was your initial thoughts after the verdict was read, and how's your thought process on the matter evolved since last Saturday?
My first reaction was a pleasant surprise that he was acquitted on all counts. I was very much afraid that this all-female jury was going to try to decide that they had to compromise in some way and convict him of something, and I was very pleased they did not. Now, at the time I wrote immediately after the acquittal, I said that one of the most important aspects of this was jury sequestration. And since then, the comments of one of the jurors has borne out that the importance of sequestration. She was going to write a book about her deliberations, her participation in this trial. And after having come out of sequestration, she discovered that there is so much, quote, pain about this, that she had decided not to write this book. She's going to maintain her anonymity. So that just goes to show you that it was probably necessary for the jurors to be shielded from the hysteria about this case in order for them to concentrate simply on the facts and not to pander to the desires of black race hustlers and white liberals.
The last time I took to the airwaves last Saturday at this time, and going through 9 o'clock Central Time, of course the jury had been involved in its deliberation. The verdict was read, I believe, 5 minutes after we got off the air, literally 5 minutes after we got off the air. So we've had a week for all of this to sink in, and we've seen the media's wailing and gnashing of teeth as a result of the acquittal, which was really the only verdict that could possibly be handed down in a fair deliberation of the facts. Richard, a response to Jared's initial take on the matter. Were you surprised at the verdict? I believe in our coverage of it last week, and again, I say they were in deliberation at the time, I predicted that there would be a compromise verdict and he would be sentenced to a lesser charge.
Yes, I was quite surprised that he was acquitted of all charges, including manslaughter. And I agree with Jared that I had a bad suspicion that the jury would just want to get him on something in order to kind of throw a bone to these people. It's interesting. I think this really shows the power of the mainstream media to just perpetuate this myth. And I think we've all heard it. And that is that there was this poor young boy who was walking around minding his own business. He was unarmed except for a bag of Skittles. And then there was this angry racist who stalked him down and just gunned him down in cold blood. And that was more or less, that myth was more or less perpetuated everywhere. And when you really get beyond that, the Skittles myth, you see that, A, this was a, you know, the case was not that unambiguous, and it was an obvious self-defense case. George Zimmerman was acting completely in his rights. He was legally carrying a concealed weapon. He was legally trying to help his neighbors by being a neighborhood watchman. He confronted Trayvon Martin, but it hardly in any kind of violent manner. It was, and this is according to Zimmerman's testimony, he was punched by Martin in his nose. He started bleeding, and Martin got on top of him, was pummeling him. It was slamming his head against the sidewalk. And it was only well into this fight that Zimmerman was being attacked that the gun, he pulled the gun and fired at Martin. So again, this myth of the racist stalker is just has just absolutely no basis in reality. And I think we should talk a lot about why these race controversies just keep coming up again and again and what their meaning is. But I think before we even talk about that, I think we should just look at how a just blatant falsehood has been perpetuated for a year and a half.
Yes.
And there have only been a few people like Jared and certainly some other people on really on all sides. You know, you have some libertarians and maybe even some truthful liberals who will talk about this. But outside of a few brave voices, a patent falsehood has been perpetuated and is continuing to be perpetuated. It's mind-boggling.
I want to toss that over to Jared for a volley, Richard, because you bring up, to me, one of the most, well, it's the defining element of this story. This, Jared, is the opening sentence to any report on this topic. Trayvon Martin was an unarmed teenager walking home from a convenience store with Skittles and iced tea when he was shot to death by a racist named George Zimmerman. Two lies in that very first sentence is that, number one, well, yes, he was unarmed technically, but does that mean that you don't have the right to defend yourself when someone's attempting to beat you to death with their fist? And number two, George Zimmerman wasn't even white. And I think that's something that has not escaped the media. I think they're just so vile and venomous and dripping with hatred for white people that they just wrote the script that he was and just ran with it. So how, and almost without exception, as Richard mentioned, Jared, this is the line touted by everyone. I was watching Headline News' coverage after the verdict was read last Saturday night. There was a panel of six people, and each of the six was in the tank for the prosecution. How did George Zimmerman become cast as a white man in this case? Is it that the media is so anxious for there to be a real life, a Time to Kill or Mississippi Burning type murder in the common era that they just write this and hope that it flies?
Well, the media like nothing better than to have what they think is a real life, genuine white racist in their crosshairs. I think nothing fills them with joy as the prospect of once again dragging out this great myth of white America. And when they actually find someone that they think they can pummel, oh, they just have such bloodlust. They're happy, happy, happy. But I agree that it is remarkable the extent to which the fact that Trayvon Martin brutally attacked George Zimmerman, that has dropped completely out of the story.
Jared, hang on right there. I hate to cut you short. I was a little bit long-winded in my question. We're going to come right back to you after this, our first commercial break of the evening. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. It only is going to get better as Richard Spencer and Jared Taylor charge forward on the political cesspool right after this.
A backpack is more than just a bag, it's a statement. Whether you're a student or a professional, are traveling the world or commuting to work, Teton Sports offers a wide variety of backpacks, each of which is lightweight and durable. The book bag backpacks weigh only 1.5 pounds and come in solid pink, blue, red, or black. The session bags have eye-catching designs, adding a touch of style in pink and white or in black. Each is great for kids or adults who need a versatile, resilient, and eye-catching bag. The professional and the executive are sleek, sturdy backpacks with numerous uses. Whether you're hiking in the mountains or packing for an important business trip, these bags have plenty of room. Not only are the backpacks comfortable and lightweight, but they're large enough to fill all your needs. Teton Sports also offers sleeping bags, duffels, tents, cots, camp pads, and more to ensure a quality outdoor experience. Look for Teton Sports products at Amazon.com, Sportsman's Warehouse, Dick's Sporting Goods, Wholesale Sports, or visit TetonSports.com.
Are you familiar with the term vigor? Strength in body and mind? He pursued his tennis game with vigor, for example? Well, I hadn't, but I learned about it from Kirk Crosby. All right? And he actually let me take a scientifically proven free vigor test. And I got 13 out of 32, not very good. But I worked on it with him. And believe it or not, now I have a 29 out of 32 and improving vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is this scientific vigor score, huh? My response is you got to take the free test available now. Get a hold of Kirk Crosby to learn about it. The number is 801-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211. Or email Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com. That's Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com for your free vigor test today. Kurt, libertyroundtable.com, or 801-669-2211. Vigor test free, scientifically proven today.
Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign Newspaper. It is time for you to read the most daring underground publication. Spreading the word through print, it seeks to enlighten the free people to be knowledgeable with current, important events and take action in their own communities to stop the New World Order agenda of one world government. This publication is so rogue and extremely daring that establishment sources and critics rarely give approval of its content. Featured articles by concerned citizens, prominent whistleblowers, and credible authors. The Sovereign Newspaper is a monthly 32-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about current events in the age of Obama. The Sovereign Newspaper, available now at newsstands everywhere.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, folks, welcome back to the show. Again, what we're doing tonight is dedicating the entire 3 hours of the program to the Zimmerman verdict and the ensuing racial agitation, violence, and mayhem that has followed. And Jared Taylor was in the middle of making a point right before the break. And just to kind of reset the table, I was commenting that the media is so sick, so blinded by their apparent hatred of white people that they've somehow managed to sink to depths never before considered fathomable. And that's saying something for a regular listener of this show. I think that they salivate for there to be a real-life white-on-black murder like the fictionalized accounts in the movie A Time to Kill. But these murders just don't seem to occur in real life. In fact, quite the opposite is true. Black-on-white murders and rapes have spiraled out of control. It's even become a sport of sorts with the knockout game phenomenon. But you know, gentlemen, that white-on-black murders don't happen like this, because if they did, they wouldn't have had to cast the non-white Zimmerman to play the role of a white man in this case. And so I guess, Jared, the question was before the break, why is the mainstream media, without exception, going to such great lengths to inject a racial animus into this story and to foment racial discord? This is a case that never should have been brought to trial. There never should have been any charges filed. It never should have been a story.
That's exactly right. And Don West, who was one of George Zimmerman's defense lawyers, he pointed out that if his client had been black, there never would have been a case. That guy, of all the people who've been involved in this case and have spoken out, is actually the closest to our point of view, I think, in terms of understanding what the racial dynamic is. But he has largely kept silent. As a part of my duty for preparing for this program, I spent a good part of today just skipping around radio channels, radio stations, listening to what people were saying about this. And to my astonishment, the only thing that you hear over and over and over again is that, of course, George Zimmerman was racially profiling Trayvon Martin. And the other thing they go on and on and on again is about the fact that Trayvon Martin was unarmed. Those are the two things you hear. And the fact, as I said before, that Trayvon Martin attacked George Zimmerman. To my astonishment, despite all of this testimony, despite a verdict of not guilty, this seems to have dropped completely out of the picture. And it just goes to show to me how utterly blind to the facts. Now, this is something we've known for years, but it is always brought home to me in a particularly disquieting way when something like this happens, when the facts are thrown in everybody's face, but the fact of this assault, and it was an aggravated assault if you consider the concrete as a potential death-dealing weapon, the fact of this aggravated assault is just gone. It's just gone. It's breathtaking, the ability that these race hustlers and white liberals have to simply close their eyes to the most obvious facts.
Pat Buchanan, one of the few people to still have a toehold in the establishment media, of course, wrote a spot-on commentary about this. He wrote that Trayvon Martin was shot after he sucker punched George Zimmerman, breaking his nose, knocking him down, jumping on top of him, beating him martial arts style, and banging his head on a concrete walk while George Zimmerman screamed again and again, "Help me, help me." That's what George Zimmerman said happened. It's what the sole eyewitness to the fight, John Good, says happened. It's what Sanford police believed. It's what the defense proved beyond a reasonable doubt. It's what a jury of six women also believed. Richard, over to you. Those are facts of the story, and those are the only elements of the story that you will never hear on any cable news broadcast. I haven't watched a lot of Fox News coverage on it. Maybe from time to time they might slip in a slimmer of objectivity, but for everybody else, it's just non-existent.
Well, yes, because the narrative comes first and the facts come later, because the narrative is what is really important. And I think we should think about that. As humans, we need stories and we need myths. We need ways of making sense of the world. And to a very large degree, the way that people make sense of the world today is that there are some, you know, bad racists out there holding people down, and that's the cause of poverty and wars and hatred and so on and so forth. It really is that simple. It's a bit kind of like a phony religion, something like that. And, you know, you could kind of see this. I think when you see all of these scandals that just keep coming again and again, of someone uses the N-word, the Duke lacrosse team is accused of rape, someone had a noose in his car, something like this, all of these things, they seem to be representations of an earlier time in America. And I think that what the narrative and what the media is saying is that the past is not past, that we're never going to allow whites to ever get over it because they haven't been fully reconstructed. You know, the slavery, the Duke lacrosse team was an expression of the remnant of, you know, of slavery, of raping women. Paula Deen is like a plantation owner. All of these things are totally silly, and all of these things have no basis in factual reality. But it's that sentiment or that implication is what gives all of these things power. It's this idea that the past is never past, that we're never going to get over this, that we need this massive governmental and legal civil rights structure to keep controlling us and keeping whites in line and keep educating us and re-educating us. And the justifications for all of this are these myths, these little narratives. And so this is why, unless we really fundamentally change our society and also kind of fundamentally change ourselves spiritually, we're just going to suffer through these again and again. We can predict what's going to happen next. There's going to be another N-word scandal. There's going to be some crime that looks like there might have some, you know, a white hatred involved in it. We're going to be talking about this for another year and a half. Until we really fundamentally change our society and ourselves, we're going to suffer through these scandals endlessly.
We're going to come up on a break shortly, and after the commercials, I want to go right back to Jared. But before we do, Richard, you wrote in your article today that, you know, George Zimmerman very narrowly escaped this, and he, as a non-white, had a pretty impeccable resume of, dare I say, radical egalitarianism. I mean, he certainly was not someone who would visit any right-thinking website. And I'm glad Zimmerman was acquitted. I was certainly a cheerleader of his and am guilty of pumping my fist a couple of times when I was informed of the verdict. But if he so narrowly escaped this, what hope is there for any of us to receive justice in a similar case?
Yeah, Exactly. I mean, I think George Zimmerman, and in his way, represented the dream of post-white, colorblind America. He came from a racially mixed background, somewhat like Barack Obama. You know, he did racially profile Trayvon Martin, whatever that means. But he also had a black business partner. He defended a black homeless man against the police. So I think that he was a convinced liberal. I think he was a kind of dream of post-white racial America. And yet even he was caught in this trap of racial revenge. And so I think we need to think about this as white Americans, that if George Zimmerman cannot escape this, then certainly we can't. And we really, it's not just about coming up with the right facts. I mean, those are important, and I think truth is obviously very important. But we really need to reorient ourselves spiritually and think about what kind of society we want to live in the future if we are going to escape these things that in which George Zimmerman was trapped.
Do you think that, and I'll ask this since Jared's on the line with us and we all have this in common, do you think that if George Zimmerman had been in attendance at the NPI press conference at the National Press Club at which we all spoke, would he be in jail today?
I don't know. I guess I do have some faith in the same people who would acquit him. You're assuming that he was innocent of murder, but hey, thought like God.
Well, it won't pay to find out, and I'm sure he's glad he doesn't have to find out either. But it's an interesting question.
Right.
We'll follow that train of thought when we come back. Stay tuned, everybody.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Travelers Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com. Your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride.
Hello, everyone. James Edwards here. Are you sick and tired of liberals and race hustlers and the media calling you a racist just because you oppose Obama's policies? Well, my friend, those days are over. After you read Racism Schmacism, you'll never again fear being called the R word. I invite you to discover why every conservative in America needs a copy of my explosive new book. Racism Schmacism has received much critical acclaim and will equip you with the key to unlock their socio-political nuclear bomb once and for all. Order your copy today by visiting the official website of the Political Cesspool radio program, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Proceeds of each sale go to help keeping our award-winning show on the air, and they make great gifts for your conservative friend or family member. Buy Racism Schmacism today at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cofcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
I'm so pleased and honored to have as my guest this hour Richard Spencer, president of the National Policy Institute, npiamerica.org. Be sure to check out the website and make your reservation for their upcoming conference in Washington, D.C., just a couple of weeks away. Also, Jared Taylor, the editor of American Renaissance magazine, amren.com. Amren.com. Jared, I want to talk to you for a moment about some of the statements that have been made before, during, and after the trial by so-called leaders in the black community and the media itself. Jesse Jackson made the comment, blacks are under attack, killing us is big business. Trayvon was shot down in cold blood by a vigilante, martyred and murdered. A hate crime, said Maxine Waters. Another black representative said that Trayvon Martin had been executed. Of course, Spike Lee tweeted Zimmerman's home address at one time. Obama himself has done nothing to dispassionately assess this situation. He said before the trial, if I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon. And just this week, he said 35 years ago, I would have been Trayvon. This is the president speaking. And then, of course, the media. You know, it's so ironic to me, Jared and Richard, that the media has compared Trayvon Martin to Emmett Till, when, in fact, they absolutely have been advocating for the lynching of George Zimmerman. It's a rhetorical question, I guess, at this point, but what is the agenda being driven here, Jared?
Well, I think Richard put his finger on it quite adroitly, really. The agenda is to describe the United States as a hopelessly bigoted, full of seething with white racism kind of a country that must be absolutely transformed. That is what the people in the media seem to believe, and that's very much their project. And this is whenever they can find something that seems to back up their notion of white Americans as hopelessly bigoted and racist, this is the kind of behavior that we can expect from them. But I think that it is interesting to reflect on the questions you asked Richard just before the break.
Sure.
What if there were any kind of certifiably, we'll quote, racist aspect of George Zimmerman's background? As you know, the Justice Department is involved in putting together material for an they're investigating him now with the possibility of charging him with a hate crime or perhaps with violating Trayvon Martin's civil rights. I think that in answer to your earlier question, if any kind of affiliation with the political cesspool or the National Policy Institution or American Renaissance had come to the fore, and if that had been allowed as testimony before the jury, I think there's a very strong possibility that it could have swayed the jury. It certainly is the primary aspect of the way the mainstream media are treating this story. For the mainstream media, there's only one important thing, and that is whether or not there was racial profiling. The assumption is that Zimmerman profiled this poor, unarmed teenager. Whether he did or whether he didn't, the obvious aspects of this are left completely unspoken. One is that we know that Trayvon Martin, in his last moments, described that this person that he had never met before as a creepy-ass cracker. Well, that's certainly racial profiling. The other is, if George Zimmerman, and we don't know for sure, but if George Zimmerman took a particular interest in Trayvon Martin and considered him a particularly likely criminal because of his race, well, his expectations were richly, painfully rewarded, weren't they? It turns out that this guy we thought might be a criminal, yes, was a felonious criminal guilty of aggravated assault. If he was profiling, he was absolutely right to be profiling. But this aspect of the profiling is, of course, utterly unmentioned.
Well, again, the fact that Trayvon threw the first punch is utterly unmentioned. Zimmerman was profiling, or what I call employing common sense,
yes,
did that give Martin the right to attempt to beat him to death? And at that point, was Zimmerman's comeuppance a death sentence for having racially profiled, because apparently he wasn't allowed to defend himself. And I've said this before. You know, I'm glad that justice was served in this case. Had it been a mythical instance of, you know, if Trayvon Martin had been white and Zimmerman would still be Zimmerman, or let's just say Zimmerman was black, and Trayvon Martin as a white man had done the exact same things that Trayvon Martin as a black man had done. Well, first of all, of course, this never would have been a story, but right. Zimmerman would still have been well within his rights. This isn't a racial issue to me, because, you know, regardless of what the races in this situation had been, what happened should have happened. He should have had the right to have defended himself. But I want to ask you this, Jared, before we toss it back to Richard again, why are we so fixated with this? Because I guess it could be said that we don't have a dog in this fight as far as it goes. But I look at the daily postings to American Renaissance, and you know, 70-80% are related to this story. I think a solid 80% of the stories to my website last week posted were stories that have spawned in the wake of the aftermath of this verdict. Why are we as race realists so, dare I say, preoccupied with the goings on of this case? I can't think of another case in recent years that has warranted so much coverage by our sites and our community.
We are right to be concerned about this, because it is such a clear depiction of the massive, massive set of delusions that most of the country suffers under. We have to pay attention to things like this, because they are a bleak and grim warning of just what a massive wall of ignorance and self-hypnosis we have to deal with in making the most obvious, clear points about race in America. I wrote an open letter to Eric Holder after his remarks for the NAACP, and I said to him, essentially, your way of thinking means that if I don't have the right thoughts about black people, you're in effect saying I no longer have the right to defend myself against a black attacker. That is the logic of this obsession with what Trayvon Martin might have been thinking about race. There's you pointed out, James, he appears to have been an absolute model citizen. And Richard was talking about how he's just the perfect multiracial, post-racial guy. And despite this utterly clean bill of health, I think he even had, didn't he have a black prom date when he was in high school? He's got an absolute clean bill of racial health. And yet he, too, is a potential crucifixion object because of this astonishing lust that the other side has to make us out to be demons. That's why it's important for us to follow this, because it's important for us to know what we're up against, not as if we were suffering any illusions about that, but this is a smack in the face in terms of just the size, the gigantic coast-to-coast illusions that we have to be battling.
You know, it's so interesting, in our defense of white Americans, and that is certainly the mission of this show, to serve as a voice in defense of our interests, just as every other racial group has organizations and spokespeople who advance their interests, so should we as well. But we always, Jared and Richard, our organizations are demonized in this media for touting a racial agenda. In this case, it has been the media itself that has turned this in to a racial issue. Of course, that goes without saying, and we've already established that. But I want to read a couple more quotes and turn this over to Richard before the break, and then we'll come back from the break and let Richard continue. Al Sharpton said after the verdict, this is an atrocity. What the jury has done is establish a precedent that when you're young and fit a certain profile, you can be committing no crime. I guess beating a man to death or attempting to do so isn't a crime now. Just bringing home some Skittles and iced tea to your brother and be killed. Marion Barry, another exemplar of the black community, said that the Zimmerman verdict was awful. It was institutionalized racism. But the good news is, gentlemen, according to Marion Barry, that Zimmerman will never be in peace. He won't be able to get a job. He'll have to go underground, travel incognito, and never live in peace. That's the good news for me, quote unquote. Who is making this a racial issue, Richard?
Well, to ask that question and to answer it, those kind of quotations are really depressing. And obviously, I think the bigger problem is not just these people like Al Sharpton or Marion Barry or something who are professional race hustlers and who one could say at least profit from their lies and innuendos. I guess what's sadder, really, is the amount of Americans who actually genuinely believe them and don't profit in the slightest from them. That's actually even more depressing.
Well, and they are allowed to make those statements into the media. They're able to inject that into the court of public opinion, into the discourse surrounding this issue with no rebuttal at all. I mean, they make those statements, and whoever's interviewing them or allowing them to speak to their venue is just, oh, yes, of course. And they are not challenged on that at all. We got to take a break, Richard. When we come back, it's right back to you, and then I'm going to let both of you make some parting comments before the show continues with some other guests, including Sam Dixon and Kevin McDonald. Stay tuned, folks.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages, American Heritage School in American Fork.
Hi, folks. It's Sam Bushman, host of the Liberty Roundtable Live radio talk show at libertyroundtable.com. Hey, I just discovered something that I want to let you in on. Are you familiar with the Get Prepared Preparedness Expo at usapreparers.com, put on by Vince Finelli and crew? I'm telling you right now, it's a who's who of the preparedness world. With a preparedness show, along with a SHOT show, all rolled into one, it's going to be an incredible event. When? July 19th, 20th, and 21st. Where? Lebanon, Missouri. Who? Well, me, I'm going to be there, Sam Bushman. I'm going to deliver my presentation, New Media Takes Center Stage. Who else? You. I'd like to invite you to personally attend and meet me and the other talk show hosts who will be in attendance. With over 100 instructors on all kinds of preparedness items, you just can't miss it. $18 for all 3 days online at usapreparers.com or $10 a day at the door. I'm going to be there. I hope to see you there, usapreparers.com.
Ladies and gentlemen of our Liberty Roundtable audience, we invite you to consider joining us. We use the services of George Costello and Utah Document Solutions. They are your authorized Xerox sales agent. We've been experiencing great service, pricing, and results, and we've gotten to know George and his team at Utah Document Solutions, your authorized Xerox sales agent. We were facing a huge increase from our former supplier, and we've been pleased to enjoy great service and an even lower cost of our documents. We recommend that you check with George to see if he can save you money like he has for us. Call George at 801-216-4816. He is your authorized Xerox sales agent. That number again, 801-216-4816.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Political Cesspool Radio program. The first hour is absolutely flying by, as you would expect it to do when we have the caliber of guests that we do at the moment. Richard Spencer, Jared Taylor, National Policy Institute and American Renaissance, respectively. Richard, right before that break, we were following a thread pertaining to this story with you, and I'd like to give you the opportunity to continue. One thing I want to be sure to bring up is the fact that, and I think this is the most important thing that's happened, Stevie Wonder, of course, will not be performing concerts in Florida anymore as a result of this, and I think that that's something that we should talk about. And Eric Holder is on another scavenger hunt down there to find a hate crime, which, of course, the evidence is. What is it about the Obama administration? I mean, you know, could this potentially drive a wedge between the Hispanic and mestizo population and the black community, two allies that should be working in cooperation to dispossess the founding stock? And where are the... Where's La Raza and all of the Latino activist groups? Wouldn't they be in the defense of George Zimmerman had Trayvon Martin been white? I mean, what's going on here? Where are they? What's going on with the Obama administration? And what else can you add to it, Richard?
Well, I don't think this will drive a wedge between Latinos or Hispanics and blacks and white liberals. I think that that could have happened, but that clearly hasn't. I haven't seen any evidence of that. And I think the Latino community has essentially left George Zimmerman wounded on the field of battle. They've just abandoned him. And it's all about getting Whitey. It's, you know, they all have a big enemy. And they're willing to sacrifice someone as insignificant as George Zimmerman for this greater cause of deconstructing white America. I would say... about all this, I hear a lot of people, some people who are sane on this issue, will complain about things like, well, they're injecting race in it, and so on and so forth. And I fully understand and sympathize with those complaints in the sense that I think we all hope that if we were ever involved in any kind of altercation, that we would be judged fairly and on the basis of fact and not myth. But that said, I think Jared will probably agree with me because this has been, you know, his mission in his life. I think in some ways, white Americans really need to inject more race into how they think about society, politics, and their own future and their children's future. And what I mean by that is that there seems to be a kind of two competing myths in America. And I wrote about this in my art piece. And one of those is that, you know, there was these bad old days in American history when there was power and slavery and segregation and so on and so forth. But we've now gotten over that, and we fulfilled our greatest ideals, and we'll all be colorblind and so on and so forth. And I think in some ways that is that's the respectable myth of America. That's something that's embraced by all conservatives, or at least those who are allowed on TV, and it's ostensibly embraced by liberals. But there's this other myth that is not talked about, and that is essentially that all non-whites should unify themselves, either in some kind of rainbow coalition or as distinct races, against whites. And so we really have a kind of unilateral disarmament, so to speak, where whites like to talk about how they're libertarian, how they're colorblind, and so on and so forth. And while all other people might give that kind of thing lip service, but once you scratch them a little, you see that they are very racially conscious. And I think what I would just tell to maybe kind of a normal white person, a right-thinking white person, someone who thinks of himself as conservative, someone who wants to live as a decent person who wants a future for his children, that this bargain, or that, you know, we'll give up race, we'll be colorblind, we won't think of our heritage or our tradition, we'll all be these nice libertarians if you just leave us alone, that bargain does not work, and that we fundamentally need to understand ourselves consciously as members of a race, as members of a long tradition and a tradition that hopefully has a future.
Well, of course, for white people to act in the manner that you suggested in terms of, you know, we won't look at race, that's to go into society blindfolded and with your hands tied behind your back, because they'll be the only group of people who don't. And so they'll be operating at a significant handicap. Jared, back over to you. Of course, the celebrity community has fallen into line, as you would expect. No shortage of actors and actresses who are ashamed to be Americans this week in the aftermath of the verdict. Well, Beyonce holding moments of silence before her concert. Stevie Wonder won't even perform anymore.
The celebrity.
Well, you know, there are some exceptions. Bill Cosby said that
yes,
the verdict was
yes.
justified.
I'm glad you brought that up.
Charles Barkley, I guess the basketball player.
Yes.
He's gotten in trouble for saying, gosh, this was self-defense. What do you expect him to do? There have been a few black people who have seen the truth about this, but of course they've been pilloried. I was watching the Hispanic so-called civil rights groups very carefully when this started up, and I thought right from the start that they could jump both ways. As soon as they saw that there was a huge amount of momentum built up against George Zimmerman, I thought it was entirely clear what they did, and they just abandoned him. I think that has to do with a lot of different things, one of which, of course, is that they are very, very eager to get black support for amnesty for illegal immigrants. I think that Hispanics are working very, very hard now to cultivate black support for this particular piece of their very important agenda. I think that under different circumstances, in perhaps different times, Hispanic organizations could have lined up behind their Hispanic boy. I think that's not out of the question. I think that whatever rainbow coalition there is against the black man, against the white man, is a very, very uneasy and conflict-ridden one, and it exists primarily at the elite level. At the street level, blacks and Hispanics don't like each other one bit. And I think that as soon as the common goal of getting amnesty, for example, or if the Hispanics think that that should be a common goal against blacks, as soon as a few of those things are gone, I think we will be we'll be seeing lots and lots of cracks between those two groups.
We only have a couple of minutes remaining, gentlemen, and Jared, I want to give each of you, say, 60 seconds or so to offer a parting shot here. But first, I want to ask you a final question before you do so, Jared. Do you foresee, and I know we all failed in our prediction of, I'm glad that we did, too, by the way, in our prediction of how the verdict itself would play out. Do you see a civil lawsuit in the future for George Zimmerman? Where does he go from here?
George Zimmerman, I understand, has already sued the television network that edited his 911 call remarks.
Right.
I'm glad to see that. I'm also very glad to see that Angela Corey has been sued by her former employee. This Angela Corey seems to be something of a rogue operator who's got a record of charging far heavier crimes than the evidence would ever suggest, all kinds of high-handed misbehavior. So let's hope she goes the way of Mike Nifong of the Duke rape case. But, you know, may I give my parting remarks now?
Absolutely. Please do.
When this came up, it struck me as essentially another racism hoax. It was really another example of the Duke rape case and of the many, many examples of, say, black professors who will hang a noose in their own office or who will shove notes under their doors calling them N-words and things. And it turns out they were the ones who did it. This is a huge example of that kind of attempt to blame something on white racism that has nothing whatsoever to do with white racism. The curious thing is, whenever something like this comes up, people don't talk about, say, the Gen of Six, which is another example of this. People don't talk about the Duke rape case. Their historical parallels go back 50 years. To Martin Luther King's assassination, to the Scottsboro Boys, to Medgar Evers. And that just goes to show you how desperate the liberal people are to try to come up with something that backs their utterly threadbare conception of how race and life work in America today.
Excellent summation, Jared, and I would encourage people to stay tuned to Amrin.com for continuing coverage of the story as it unfolds going into the future. Richard, we have about 60 seconds left before I have to wish you both a good evening. Final parting shot from you, my friend.
Well, I would second everything Jared said. I think he stated things so beautifully. I don't think I have to say any more. If you would allow me just one quick plug.
Absolutely, please do.
If we do want to overcome things like this recurring series of race hoaxes and shakedowns. I think we need organizations like American Renaissance and the Political Cesspool, and also MPI. And if you really are interested in connecting with activists, and if you want to really become a part of this movement for racial awakening, there's an opportunity this late October. It's October 26th in Washington, D.C., and we'll be holding a very interesting conference with a lot of interesting people, and I think also a lot of people who are going to surprise, an American audience. And so you could find out more about that at npiconferences.net or npiamerica.org. And
folks,
you can register and do the whole thing there. So I really would encourage people, if you really want to connect with us, this is an opportunity to do that.
NPIAmerica.org. It comes with my heartiest endorsement as well. Richard and Richard Spencer and Jared Taylor, gentlemen, thank you so much for giving us a little bit of your Saturday evening and making yourselves available. It's been an honor. Everybody else, the Political Cesspool continues in its second and third hour. Plenty of all-star guests still forthcoming. Stay tuned.